If you've been in your industry for any length of time, you've probably had different jobs and experiences that have prepared you for the job that you're doing today. If you think back on your best of times, it's likely you were doing work that tapped into your natural talents and where you got to put your skills and experience to work, where you truly felt you were in the zone. This episode is about considering outsourcing your investment recovery function to help you focus your time, your energy, and your resources on the big picture job you were hired to do. Essentially, how to help you do what you do best. You are listening to I Need This Gone Tomorrow, a podcast by Material Management Resources. MMR is a full-service investment recovery firm serving a variety of industries, including oil and gas and utilities. On this podcast, we talk all about responsible investment recovery, which is more than an afterthought. It can become a strategic advantage and differentiator if it's handled properly. This podcast is about how you and your company can leverage investment recovery in your projects. My guests today are Yako Simon and Melissa Graham. Welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today, we're talking about something many, many managers have a hard time doing, and that's delegating. Mm. With the best of intention, hardworking managers want to do it all. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not the most efficient way to get it done. When you think of supply chain or procurement managers, you've known through the years, Yako, how is it that their performance is typically measured?
Well, a lot of it's performance-based, and one of the large measurable items that they can do is based on sales, and so they get target numbers that they would try to achieve. Say, for example, their budget requires them to have sales for $1 million or $2 million or $5 million.
When you work with your managers, how do you guys help them do that?
A lot of it has got to do with being there, because a lot of our clients aren't just local to Texas, and so when you get in front of them and you start to learn the lay of the land, especially where their yards are, because they've got different yards in different areas. For example, if you one of the states that I go to frequently is North Dakota, and once you get there, you don't make it up. You know, during the winter times, it's hard to go look at a valve when there's 2 feet of snow on the ground.
I would imagine.
And so you would go mainly during the summer times, April through about October is a good time to go. And so, you know, during the winter times, they may have learned where some assets are, and then once the snow melt, you can go get a good inventory. Mm-hmm. It's time consuming when you go buy a shovel and you're shoveling around some counterweights to see how many there are. Mm-hmm. But when you get there, they try and cram as much of your time and get be as productive as possible. So you go and look through all the yards, and sometimes there are certain things that is just out of view for them, and so you would drive by a yard and you'll just kind of quiz them and ask, hey, I drove by this one yard, I saw a rack of pipe, is that surplus or is it going to be used? I use pipe as an example. More often than not, it's valves or vessels or stuff mm-hmm. that get squirreled away in a hidey hole that nobody knows about. And you'll also be surprised that a lot of times buyers would call us and say, mm-hmm. hey, do you know of this particular client's
They've
yard.
Been driving by the
right.
Right.
And
okay.
So a lot of that, but mostly it's they'll find out where the stuff is and give you a call. But I found that being physically there, it sparks a lot of thought-provoking ideas with them. It's like, hey, what about this? Can you go look at that?
Right.
We have this and this piece of equipment in a different yard. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, I found a lot of it is the engagement with our clients.
Yes, and being there. I can certainly understand how when you are physically present in a place every single day, things kind of start to become wallpaper to you.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So for you to go make the effort, be on site, and look at it with a fresh pair of eyes, I'm sure you find a lot of things that they're like, wow, I didn't even realize that was there anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes I liken it to cleaning out your garage or your closet or something like that. You know, I'm in and out of there every day. And just having somebody there alongside with you to be like, no, you haven't worn that or you haven't used that. And, you know, I saw that last trip up here. Right. It's still sitting in the same spot. When we first got into the refineries, there was a yard that had a lot of heavy equipment, and it was just sitting there and sitting there. And so the guys went out and put chalk marks on the tires and went back, you know, a few months later and said, that tire hasn't moved. That chalk mark's in the exact same spot. And then the yard manager was like, you know, you're right. We're not using them. Let's, you know, surplus them.
And also a tactic used by the police when they're ticketing your car.
Yeah.
The
was there a boot on that big tire? Or
exactly. Exactly.
I love it. So, Melissa, what percentage of supply chain or procurement managers' time is spent in investment recovery or in jobs related to it?
We very rarely work with somebody that is their sole task. Mm-hmm. So they're tasked with something else. It's usually on the procurement side. So they're working with projects and getting materials for them. And somebody says, oh, yeah, since you're doing that, let's tack this onto you. So it takes them from a full-time job and being at 100% to 110 or 120% sometime. Just investment recovery isn't always given the importance that it needs.
Right. And I would imagine, like any other job, that if you only do it part of the time, ramping up for it. And can you talk a little bit about that, what your experience is? If somebody's focus and job and energy has been in procurement and managing a project, tell me about the shift, how you guys help a client with that.
I think we bring to the table a wealth of buyers. And when you're on the procurement side, you're looking at vendors and you're purchasing, and you may, when you try to surplus material, try to do some sellbacks to the to the vendors. And that's always a good method of return. And if you can dispose of your material that way, it's great. But we can bring in those outside buyers that can come in and assess, give a relatively, you know, fair value for the material. It's not trying to sell to, you know, your neighbor down the street or your friend or somebody that you're trying desperately to find somebody that might seek value in it, but we bring that network of buyers.
Yako, what is it that MMR brings to the table that allows a supply chain or procurement manager to focus on their core responsibility?
Well, it goes back to what all MMR brings to the table as far as inventory, all the documentation and approvals, and then going to the funding and the contract and so forth. So going back to just as simple as I said, going traveling there, that manager may have 10 minutes to show you, here's a lot of 100 valves, right? But it's going to take you 4 hours to tag them all, take all the inventory, take all the pictures, and then making sure you got your pictures that you want for inventory purposes, and then also your pictures for the website purposes to give that visual effect. Maybe you need a video just to give the folks an overall view of it. And, you know, that goes back to Melissa's comment about the 110%. You know, they got 5 minutes to show you something, which is valuable, very valuable, and then we'll take that rest of that responsibility off of their shoulders, and we'll take it from that five-minute walk right there to, at the end of the day, to having a buyer picking it up and loading it on a truck and it getting out of their, I wouldn't say out of their way, but bringing a return back to their company.
And we take the time to learn their controls, and we operate within that control system and verify that we do have the document, that we are following the procedures to keep them out of audit jail, audit trouble, so that when, you know, not only are they meeting their goals, when it cycles around and they're going through audits, they're getting clean reports.
Clean reports, because otherwise they have to go back into the project and that takes even more of their time away.
Exactly. And we provide that, you know, audit documentation for them so they can just pick up the phone or shoot us an email and it's on their desk.
So, Melissa, I hear you guys talk about value-added service. Can you define what that means to MMR?
I think to us, it's we take the role that you're giving us within your company seriously. we want to make sure we're doing the right thing the first time, like Yucca mentioned. We want to make sure we're operating within your controls. We want to make sure we're answering your questions before you even ask them. We feel like we're a part of the team mm-hmm. at the client, not just a service provider. So we really strive to be above board about mm-hmm. everything. If there's an analysis that they need and it's a different report than what they've requested before, we work with them to figure out what it is that we'll be able to provide that will give them the information that they need to operate more efficiently, more effectively within their organization. Most recently, we're going through the process of reissuing an annual contract to remove surplus hydrocarbon out of a facility in the area. It seems every time we bid this one out, there's new client personnel in the roles that need to approve and get comfortable with mm-hmm. the results. And so this most recent year, they're wanting to go back and verify some of the wording that was in the contract. I was searching, found an email supporting documentation from 2015 that I was able to provide to them to say, this is where it originated. This is who gave it to us. This was the process that we went through. And that's how it ended up here. And they were like, thank you. That's the exact information we needed. It will help us move through this process and issue the new agreements and move forward with the service. And we do all of this just under our service agreement.
Let me make sure I understand. When a client contracts with you, I would imagine that you really can't foresee the questions that are going to come up, right?
We can't.
That somebody new is in the management role, who knows what they're going to expect or what questions they're going to ask them.
That's very true. Okay. That's very true. And we have this one calculation that we do for one client that they call it value gained. And it's a way that they can measure for their reporting and internal goals of what value was gained through the disposition of the mm-hmm. assets. It's a calculation based on carrying value and purchase cost and disposal value that, while the key elements of the calculation have remained the same through the years, the way that it's calculated, it has varied. And that depends on which manager is in the role and what they perceive as the most critical portion
as
of that
big
calculation.
Value to them, mm-hmm. right? Because they're managing the process.
Right.
So when a client enters into an agreement with MMR, mm-hmm. the price that is initially given is the price that they pay.
Correct. Basically, for the majority of our services, they don't pay unless we sell the item. If they need us to come out and do, you know, just some inventory work or provide advice, and we're not going to get to sell the items that we're working with, mm-hmm. then yes, we will agree on a fee structure there.
Right.
But otherwise, it's value-added service on, we're not just going to get rid of your material, we're going to support you all the way through the process.
I see.
The other way that we add in the value added to it is I think we pride ourselves in not just to do quantity, but we do try to do quality, right? So, I mean, we can go and tell our clients, hey, just send me a picture and give me a brief description and we can put it on the website. And, you know, that's the easy way of doing it. But we don't generally do that. There was a recent inventory that was done and the client had a brief description of all the materials that were there, but there was pieces to that puzzle that was missing. So mm-hmm. we went back, we took some more pictures, did the inventory. So we'll go through it and separate out the columns in the Excel file and make the list easy to read so that when you follow the list as a buyer, you can see, okay, this is a 1,500-pound ANSI, mm-hmm. all valve, 9-inch, and then if there's a model number and the trim and everything else on it. And so, you know, that's where we add the most value to it is, you know, yes, we went and did the inventory, but we also try to put the quality to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And you organize it in a way that facilitates the buyer's ease of purchase.
Correct.
Right. The more information we can gather on an item, typically the greater return. The mm-hmm. buyers know exactly what they're looking at. what they're getting. It answers their questions. It helps them feel the specific, and so they can assign more value to it. If you just tell them, I have a 4-inch valve, and they don't know if it's a gaita, chuck, a butterfly, mm-hmm. what type, then, you know, it'll be a lower value.
Right.
And we try to, like Melissa said earlier, we try to ask the questions. There's a lot of questions we ask up front. It sometimes seems tedious, but that's not our intent. It's mm-hmm. if you can ask the right questions up front, you will avoid a lot of the
right.
unnecessary additional work on the back end of right. of a project. So if you ask up front, hey, who's providing the loadout? That eliminates all the questions during the process, and there's no miscommunication at the end of the mm-hmm. at the contracting phase when the payment's done and the release is done. It's like, buyer's responsible for loadout, period. And so you can work through that. I said buyer's responsible for loadout, but there's other things involved. Like, do they need a crane? And, you know, there's other questions. But mm-hmm. we try to anticipate a lot of these questions so that that value goes back to our clients, so that mm-hmm. it alleviates some of the stress mm-hmm. on their end, so that we provide all that service for them up front.
You know, it occurs to me that one of the reasons that managers are really hesitant to delegate is they don't necessarily trust that the job will be done as well as if they did it themselves. Can you speak to how you help build trust with a client?
I think the biggest way we build that trust is just being above board about everything. If we mess up, we're going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that we mess up. No. But if we don't have their trust, they're not going to seek us out. They're not going to think of us. They'll find another vendor to work with. I think the highest compliment somebody can give us is when they do let us know that they trust us. We were working with one manager at a company that was in the investment recovery role. And when he left that and went to a new company, it was a few years that he was in that position. And we kept in contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he reached out to us and he said, we have the opportunity to bring in another vendor to provide investment recovery services to us, and I'm specifically reaching out to you because of the level of service that you provided to me at mm-hmm. my previous job. I know what quality work that you do. I know that you're going to be above board. He said, I trust you. And they had just had a bad experience with another company, and it helped him pave the way to bring in a trusted resource for his new position.
That's great.
So trust is something that takes time. And I think for us, actions speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I go back and look at, you know, we spend 5 minutes in the yard and we look at all the stuff and go back to the office and put everything together and put the sale together and everything goes smoothly. You do two or three like that and they see the quality of work that you bring to the table. The next time it might be, hey, do all the safety precautions, but you know where the yard is? Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. So go out. This is what I want you to look at, and they'll send you on your way, and mm-hmm. you provide the same level of service, and they may not even have been there for a minute. And so over time, those trust, it's relationships that we like to build, and those relationships is based on the trust that we've done because of the actions and the quality of work that we bring to the table.
Can you give us some examples of key indicators when it's time to call in the investment recovery experts?
It's either when the person is new in the position or just overwhelmed, as we said, you know, the 110%, mm-hmm. and they look at this project and it could just be overbearing. There's, you know, 100 valves, 10 tons or, you know, that's not a large example, 100 tons of pipe, and they've got all this project leftover material, for example, or they have to clean up a yard, and it just looks extremely daunting if you just look at it as a project in whole. But if you start taking it little by little, mm-hmm. and we get our team together and we go out and we do the inventory, you can take little bits of it and start working at it. You know, depending on what your timeline is, if you have an extreme timeline, like here's an entire yard, you need it gone in a week, well, inventorying might not be an option. You have to go past the investment recovery and let's go to recycling phase of it, as we discussed in our 7 R's podcast previously. But if there is enough time, then you can go and dissect this pile and or this yard, for example, and see here's your valves, here's your pipe, here's your pumps, here's your motors, and you can organize it, and you can get that inventory all together, get your pictures, get a video if you need it, and then come back to the office, package it all nicely, the quality of work that we discussed earlier, and then go through the process of putting it out to bid, reviewing with the client, getting the approvals and so forth, and then just step by step. But if you haven't looked at a project like that before, it could be overbearing. And so we bring that almost a calmness to it. It's like it's going to be all right. We'll get through it. Let's work mm-hmm. through it step by step. And that relieves a lot of stress and a lot of pressure off of their shoulders.
Well, and Yaka mentioned, you know, specifically the step by step, but then the lotting of the material, the grouping of like kind of assets together. I think that's something that our guys are really good at, of seeing where the return is. Mm-hmm. Or this item may not be of much value, and if you try to sell it by itself, it's never going to sell. But if we can put it in with this group, if the goal is to clean the yard and we'll get the most value for it in with this group versus trying to isolate it.
Okay. So you can give some feedback on what goes with what,
yes,
and be able to package it or bundle it in a way that's going to be attractive to your buying community, because you're in touch with them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a procurement manager probably isn't, because they're working with vendors.
Right.
How does a client know when an investment recovery recommendation is top notch? If I'm a procurement manager someplace and I need help with investment recovery, how do I know if what I'm looking at is a solid recommendation? What should I be looking for?
It depends on what their expectations are, right? So if they are in a situation to where they're in a yard and then you get out of the yard. So real estate is an issue because the one project is done and the next project is coming in. So for them at that point in time, a top-notch suggestion or recommendation would be is timeliness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So get a strategy together, get it done, and meet their timeline. That would meet their expectation and then get them out of the bind that they're currently in. Some of the other ones is, they'll say, well, let's just scrap it. It's junk. It's not worth anything to anybody. We'll take our expertise and look at it. It's like, well, maybe we should just list it and see what the market brings. We've seen some success in some other areas with this, and
mm-hmm.
For them that would be a winner, because they were just going to scrap it, but here you get 3-4 times, maybe 10 times what they would have gotten scrapped. So you bring back that return on that particular item for them. So that'd be a winner for them. The other one would be where you would think there's no value and they're wanting to landfill it, and you can find a purpose for it, as Melissa mentioned earlier. It's a great notch in the belt to say, well, it didn't cost you anything, so we avoided cost for you. And so that might be a good mm-hmm. way for them to go back to their management and said, we were expecting to spend $100,000 on disposing of this item, but we ended up selling it for $10,000 and saved our project a combined, net of 110. So there's different aspects of what they can consider being top notch, and I think those are mainly the three ones that they'll look at as far as what their expectation is. And we as MMR always, it's one of our first questions we ask is, what is the expectation? What is the goal? How mm-hmm. can we meet that? How can we exceed that? And so we try to listen to what our clients' needs are.
Yeah, and I think when we give the recommendations, we typically back it up with facts and figures.
Mm-hmm.
Yaka mentioned, surplusing versus scrap. Well, if we put it out for a bid and we try to surplus it and the results come in, we'll compare it to what the scrap rate was to find out that,
really
had a home run and knocked it. Or you know what? This is below scrap value. You're going to get more if you just send it that way. And so we're honest.
Okay. So I'm going to go with short term first. Since this podcast name is I Need This Gone Tomorrow, Melissa, can you talk to me a little bit about short-term projects? How long do those operations typically take?
Well, a typical sale will take about a month time frame, but schedule is always one of our first questions. Yaka said we ask what their expectations are. That's one of the first things we'll ask. Mm-hmm. When does this need to be gone? And it's surprising how often we do get that call of, I need this gone tomorrow. One of our goals as your investment recovery team is to have a competitive bid so that we know that it's above board. And when those come in, we can reach out to our buyers and say, we've got this material. They need, we just recently did this with furnace tubes. We got the call on Wednesday. They needed bins by Friday. So we got bids, contracts, and funding all in time to drop those bins on Friday. But we were able to reach out to the known buyers of that material,
mm-hmm.
get a quick turnaround, get that back to the site for approval, and then proceed through the process.
What about longer-term projects that you might be in with the client from more at the beginning of the project?
Yeah, so the typical one that comes to mind is the dismantlement or the demo project of a gas plant, for example. We would go in, and those can vary from time depending on the size and the the end of the project, if they're going to turn into a brownfield or a greenfield. So depending on all the work that goes into it, I mean, it could take from 6 months to a year and a half. We'll be in at the beginning of phase of it and meet with the project managers and then also the dismantlement crew. Even before that, they'll meet with the environmental guys to make sure the plant is safe and drained and purged. And so even at that point in time, we can start looking at the inventory and going through the data, because there's a lot of data that you need to include in the sale documentation from the data room that needs to be digitized most of the times. And so once they start doing the planning phase, we can get the interaction with the demo company and saying, all right, well, we think this tower can be sold, this vessel can be sold, and they'll start formulating a plan. It's like to remove some of the pipe racks around it so that at the end of the project, there's only tower standing and vessel standing so that you can bring in the cranes all at once, mm-hmm. lay all the vessels down directly on the trucks to save time and money. And so that planning phase of it is very important. And as they're cutting through the pipe racks, they'll remove some pumps and motors and valves, and they can stage that fairly close in the project area. As they're working on that, on a separate occasion, you'll come back and you'll look at all those valves, for example, and say there's 100 valves. The project manager called you and said, hey, please come look at, there's about 100 valves. Let's inventory these and get these out of the way, because mm-hmm. they're continuously bringing in more. And so throughout the project, you'll work very closely with them and work through all those steps and get that smooth process all the way from the start, from the planning to the execution until the end of the project, as far as collecting deposits potentially and getting all that information together and going through the steps of bidding and contracts and so forth. And there's other parts to the project too, except the sales, because now you're getting a huge volume of steel and metals out of the project. So you got to get a contract in place for the scrap material. And for the most part, the demolition company will take care of the waste, because that's part of their mm-hmm. scope of work. And so the dismantlement project usually, you know, from the start to the beginning, like I said, about a year or so. So that's more a long-term project where you get the major sales and then you get some of the little smaller sales that you have to continuously work throughout mm-hmm. this process.
And Yako brought up a key point there about being involved in that planning process. We even see that in the refineries to do turnarounds. And if we can get involved in that planning process and walk the turnaround area before the work actually starts, we can tag items that are higher value so that when they're pulled, they can be set aside to mm-hmm. be surplus versus going in the scrap bin, and help with the cost of that project because we're able to use the proceeds from those sales to offset the cost of it. With turnarounds, it's really important too, because it's an active facility
mm-hmm.
and they can't lose production.
No.
And so it's really critical to have that timeline laid out.
Okay, so let's summarize what we've talked about today. Project managers are busy people who have a whole lot of other things to do above and beyond investment recovery. So I hear you wanting to help people do what they do best, allow them to really dedicate their time to the management of the project that they've been charged with, and pull in an investment recovery expert to help them do what they do best.
We really like our job. We get excited when it's a successful project, and just learning from the new and different items we might see on occasion or the different people we get to work with as we go through the process.
The other thing that really struck me is, as big a job as investment recovery really is, most companies only have like one or two people that are dedicated to that job across the entire operation. When in reality, companies can have a whole team of experts by working with MMR without the hassle of having to hire full-time staff.
You said it 100%, Candace. One or two people that dedicate, 5% of their time to bringing in potentially millions to the bottom line of the company and the stockholders is what we can bring to the table for them.
I've also heard that project managers don't always have time for the intense detail work required to get maximum value for surplus materials.
Right, they don't. They're pulled in other directions. They're busy procuring supplies, and we can come in and assist with that. There's no cost to them unless we sell something,
mm-hmm.
and they get a whole team of resources without having to hire or have the burden of hiring or having the additional payroll cost.
Mm-hmm. And that shift of focus going out of one mindset and into another is a hard shift to make. So
really
you guys
is.
Live in that world all the time. We want to thank our guests, Yalco Simon and Melissa Graham, for sharing your time and expertise with us today. Thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome. It's really been enjoyable.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To learn more about material management resources and how we can help you responsibly handle surplus materials, visit us online at materialmg.com.